Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 21st. Oil conference opens on bullish note. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. The annual Hart Energy Executive Oil Conference opened on a bullish note as the opening speaker forecast improved crude oil prices into next year. Analysts at energy-dedicated software-as-a-service firm Enverus believe oil prices are $10 oversold and expect Brent crude, the global benchmark, to rebound to $85 a barrel next year and $87 in 2026, said Daniel Romero, Director, Energy Strategy at Enverus. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark, is expected to be a few dollars behind. Romero told his audience natural gas prices have exhibited some interesting characteristics, showing elasticity in recent months. For example, he said a 20-cent move on the New York Mercantile Exchange equals a 1 billion cubic feet per day swing up or down a month or two later. Enverus expects to see what it calls a structural uplift once the wave of liquefied natural gas exports hits, pushing prices from an average $3 per MMBTU in 2025 to $4 per MMBTU in 2026. Quote, "The fundamentals are sound for robust oil prices," he said. Taking a look at supply and demand, Romero said global oil demand is forecast to grow 6 million barrels a day by 2030, and there is a 2 to 3 million barrel per day supply gap outside the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries that is yet to be filled. The strongest supply growth is expected to come from Argentina, Brazil, Guyana, Suriname, Kazakhstan, Oman, China, and Canada. In the U.S., more volumes will come from the Gulf of Mexico and the Permian Basin. Quote, "Once we close in on 2030, most areas outside the Midland Basin and the Texas and New Mexico portions of the Delaware will flatline," Romero said. The Permian Basin is expected to plateau at 8.5 million barrels of oil per day by 2030, with public operators driving that growth, he said. Enverus does see growth in what it called yet-to-be-proven economic, geologically viable inventory between 2026 and 2030. By 2028-2029, he said, private companies driving that yet-to-be-proven inventory will disappear and public operators will be responsible for output growth. Both the Midland and Delaware basins have recovered from a production trough seen over the last 4 to 6 quarters, reporting increases in production during the second quarter, Romero said. The Permian remains an acquisition target, he said, given, quote, "the preciousness of inventory and how it factors into the global oil inventory and what the Permian contributes," end quote. With large producers like Pioneer Natural Resources and Endeavor Energy Resources snapped up, Romero said large family companies dominate the last privately held inventory economic below $50 a barrel, and deal-making has been getting more creative. Quote, "It does take singles and doubles to put together the inventory needed rather than writing a single check," he said. Midland ISD Board elects new leadership amid vote tensions. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The Midland ISD Board of Trustees on Tuesday saw the debut of three new faces, two of whom will join Brandon Hodges as board leaders. After 4 hours in executive session, board members returned to the stage at Bowie Fine Arts Academy Auditorium to choose leadership positions. Hodges was elected as the next school board president. The vote was 4-2 with one abstention. Hodges was joined by newcomers Angel Hernandez from District 2, Matt Fries from District 4, and Josh Gwynn from District 7 in the vote of approval. Tommy Bishop of District 3 and Sarah Burleson of District 7 voted against. Michael Booker, who was re-elected to his District 1 spot this month, abstained, citing his desire to vote for both Hodges and Burleson, who nominated herself to be president. Booker was told he could only vote for one. Quote, "This vote is being ramrodded. It's not good for the district," Burleson told the board and those in attendance still there at 10:45 p.m. Burleson failed to secure the spot of vice president after she was nominated by Bishop and seconded by Booker. The vote was 3-4. Instead, Gwynn was elected 4-3, with Hodges, Hernandez, Fries, and Gwynn all voting to approve. For secretary, Booker's nomination by Bishop and seconded by Hodges failed after a 3-3 vote, with Hodges abstaining. Hernandez was chosen 4-3, with Bishop, Booker, and Burleson all voting against. Quote, "This was not nice tonight, what was done. This was done with four people before we ever got here, and that's not the way that you run a board," Burleson said when board leadership voting ended. Quote, "When you have a board, you work together for the board," end quote. Gwynn, Fries, and Hernandez were sworn in after a special meeting to canvass election results Monday afternoon. Booker was sworn in Tuesday morning. In this year's general election, Hernandez unseated incumbent Robert Marquez and Gwynn defeated incumbent Brian Murray. Katie Joyner opted not to run for re-election to the District 4 spot, and Fries defeated Emily Staten Smith for a seat on the board. A fresh start. Midland welcomes first Tide Cleaners, offering 24-hour services. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. Midlanders have a new place to freshen up their clothes at the Tide Cleaners, which is locally owned and operated by Johnny Carrero. It's the first franchise in the Midland-Odessa market. Carrero worked in the oil business before COVID-19 and transferred over to Forrest Brothers Tire and Alignment in Odessa and is now taking on a new business venture. Quote, "Michael and Ross Forrest are good family friends of mine, and they decided to bring me on," Carrero said. Tide Cleaners started 4 years ago when Michael, one of the other owners, was out on vacation in Florida and came across a Tide Cleaners, end quote. Carrero said that Forrest started looking into franchise opportunities after researching Tide Cleaners and seeing how clean it was and how fresh location smelled. Quote, "Tide Cleaners is different around here," Carrero said. "People are always looking for different businesses to try, and Tide is nationally recognized. If you see that yellow and orange bullseye, you know it's Tide," end quote. He added that just looking at the logo can remind people of the fresh smell of laundry. As part of their efforts to spread the word of their opening, Tide Cleaners sent out mail coupons, which Carrero said has helped bring in customers. Tide Cleaners offers dry cleaning, washing, and folding of clothing and household items. They also offer alteration services. The dry cleaning business also offers 24-hour pickup and drop-off services. Quote, We have a 24-hour pickup kiosk, which no other dry cleaners in the area have, Guerrero said. If you drop off your clothes and forget to pick them up, but it's Friday night and you have a wedding to go to the next morning, you're able to come up here, even after we are closed, to pick up your clothes, end quote. Guerrero compared the pickup kiosk to an ATM, except for clothes. He added that the kiosk has an option for the service to be paid for through a credit card. Quote, the orders that are ready will be on the conveyor belt, Guerrero said. Once you put in your phone number, the kiosk will identify your order, spin around the belt, and drop it off to you through the window, end quote. Tide Cleaners will also be expanding their 24-hour drop-off and pickup service through laundry lockers in the upcoming weeks. Quote, I'm getting ready to install lockers at the Chevron building, which will be strictly for their employees, Guerrero said. Eventually, I'm looking to get lockers possibly at the UTPB campus, Midland College, or even at a parking garage downtown, end quote. Additionally, Tide Cleaners will offer home delivery services. Quote, the good thing about that is that we have an app which will streamline your laundry service so that you can get home delivery, Guerrero said. There will be certain zones throughout town that we will be servicing on certain days, end quote. He said that the app facilitates the pickup and drop-off home services for both the customers and the delivery driver, and that customers would receive their clothes in 2 days. Customers also receive an orange Tide Cleaners laundry bag that is a barcode unique to each customer. Quote, each time they come back, they can use the orange bag and will know who they are because of that barcode, Guerrero said. Guerrero said that Tide Cleaners uses an eco-friendly solvent called Green Earth, which is safe for clothes, people, and the environment. Quote, in the past, dry cleaners have used perchloroethylene, or PERC, which is not very good anymore, Guerrero said. People would receive their clothes and have that dry cleaning smell, whereas with our solvent, you won't have that, end quote. Guerrero said that Tide Cleaners differentiates itself from competitors through its 7 inspection points that garments receive through the cleaning process. Quote, our employees constantly inspect the garments, and our machines are preset to follow the care labels on the garments, Guerrero said. We'd like to take care of our customers' clothes the way we would want ours to be taken care of, end quote. Tide Cleaners is located at 3216 West Wadley Avenue, operating hours Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Experts say Midland-Odessa economies to grow significantly. The story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Economist Ray Perryman gazed into his economic crystal ball and saw notable growth for Midland, Odessa, and the Permian Basin. Quote, this is the 42nd year I've done this, he said, of his annual Economic Outlook Conference, hosted by Southwest Bank, while waiting for the luncheon to get underway at the Odessa Marriott. Perryman said economies for Midland, Odessa, and the Permian Basin look strong for the next 5 years. Quote, oil production is up despite there being fewer rigs due to technological improvements, he said. For the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, Perryman is forecasting real gross product will rise from $38.7 billion this year to $46.7 billion in 2029, a gain of $7.9 billion, or 3.7%. That easily outpaces both Texas growth of 3.4% and U.S. growth of 2.6%. Of that $7.9 billion increase, Perryman said over $5.6 billion will come from gains in the mining or oil and gas sector. He forecast Midland's personal income will rise to $26.5 billion in 2029 from $22.3 billion this year, an increase of $4.2 billion, or 3.4%. Midland's population is expected to increase from 181,000 this year to 194,000 by 2029, an increase of 14,500, or 1.5%. That, again, outpaces both Texas with a 1.5% population growth rate and the U.S. with a 0.5% growth rate. Perryman also expects employment in the Midland MSA to grow to 140,000 by 2029 from 127,000 this year, a gain of 12,790, or 1.9%. That compares to Texas employment growth of 1.8% and U.S. employment growth of 1.5%. The Permian Basin overall is expected to thrive overall, driven by gains in the energy sector, according to Perryman. He said the region is benefiting from diversification, citing a prosperous healthcare sector and the arrival of companies working in artificial intelligence, data centers, and Bitcoin. He also observed that the industry is beginning to successfully diversify within its energy resources, citing the growth of solar and wind farms and carbon capture projects. Quote, "As energy transitions, we're transitioning with it," he said. But the most important resource in the Permian Basin, quote, "is between our ears," he said, pointing to the intellectual property prevalent in the Permian. Any headwinds to the economy may come in the form of infrastructure. Perryman said the region needs electric generation and transmission. And it may come in how well Permian Basin children are educated, he said. Quote, "My concern is in infrastructure and people," he said. "We need power, we need roads, and we need a skilled workforce for some time to come," end quote. Midland to experience warm, sunny weekend. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Late Sunday into early Monday morning, it rained. Then on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, the lows dipped into the 30s, with parts of the northern Permian Basin put under freeze warning. Will Midland see cold, rain, and snow to end the week? Quote, "For the weekend, we don't see anything notable aside from the higher-than-average temperatures," said Vivek Shenoy, meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Midland. "We had a cold front come through with northerly winds Tuesday, but the winds are shifting to the south, and that, combined with consistent ridging across the central part of the country, will cause higher-than-normal temperatures and no precipitation," end quote. The forecast for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday each call for sunny skies with highs in the 70s during the day and clear skies in the evening with lows in the 40s. Shenoy said cold fronts might make their way into the region again next week. Red Raiders fans traveling to see Texas Tech take on Oklahoma State will enjoy sunny skies with a high of 66 in Stillwater on Saturday. Longhorns faithful headed to see Texas host Kentucky, and Aggies hitting the road to root on Texas A&M at Auburn will see much the same weather, sunny and in the 60s. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 21st. Frank Gomez Ortega, age 61, passed away on November 14th. The funeral service for Frank will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, November 22nd, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, 4601 Neely Avenue, Midland, Texas. Reception to follow after. A viewing will be held at noon, while the rosary will start later in the day at 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel at 2508 North Big Spring Street in Midland. The funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, November 21st. ECISD Board gets bond update. With the cost of Ector County ISD's new transportation facility coming in at less than expected, Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers said about $10 million could be moved to the new Career and Technical Education Center. The transportation and CTE facility are two of many projects being financed by Proposition A of the November 2023 bond. The Permian Strategic Partnership has also pledged $10 million for the new CTE facility. Proposition A was for $424,263,000. Proposition B was for $8,096,000. And Proposition C was for $3,750,000. These were more focused on athletic facilities and were defeated in the 2023 bond election. Starting with financials, as the district finalizes the location of the new transportation center identified and the fact it comes with some facilities already on it, it is anticipated $10 million designated for the transportation center can be moved to support the new CTE center. That is designated with a specific column in the finance report presented to the school board. About 10% of bond proceeds have been either spent or are designated through purchase orders for a specific purchase, the board recap said. The design of the new middle school is complete. The guaranteed maximum price, GMP, is scheduled to be presented to the school board in December, and the groundbreaking is on track to take place in January. The design development documents were presented to the school board at the meeting on November 12th. Construction documents are in progress and groundbreaking is slated for summer. The designs for the renovations of the Permian High School auditorium have been submitted. Procurement should begin in January and construction should begin in May. The timeline for the JROTC facility at PHS is very similar to the auditorium project. It is in the design development stage and construction is anticipated to start in April. The Transition Learning Center is in the schematic design phase, awaiting approval from the Community Advisory Committee. Surveying, civil engineering are being scheduled for the site, and if it remains on time, construction could begin in February or March. The TLC committee will meet right after Thanksgiving break, and the board could then receive an update on its December meeting, the recap said. The Ag Farm has seen its schematic design approved and is moving into the design development phase. Surveying is complete. The replacement of the bleachers in the main gymnasiums of our middle schools could be completed this week. Five of the six schools are done. Ector Middle School is in progress. The first set of middle school choir risers is now in place at Bonham Middle School. Ector Middle School's will be completed soon. So far, Fine Arts has ordered 578 instruments, has received 304 of them, and has spent $1.4 million on bond proceedings. From technology, surveillance storage is now complete. The campus camera installations are scheduled to begin in December. Walkthroughs have been conducted to prepare for the installation replacement of PA, bells, alarms, clock systems. Park Hill has been engaged to provide architectural, engineering, and project oversight for the Priority 1 and Priority 2 renovations replacements. Mildred Batista, Senior Project Manager at Park Hill Architects, presented an update on the agriculture farm that is also being financed by the bond. The budget for it is $7.5 million. Aaron Anderson, President of the Odessa FFA, said they are extremely thankful to the board and community for making the improvements to the farm possible. There will be a local show December 14th. Anthony Cirola, Associate Superintendent of Athletics, Human Capital and Operations, said they have talked about having a groundbreaking for the new middle school in mid-January. The guaranteed maximum price is expected to be presented to the board December 17th. Construction on the Transition Learning Center is expected to start in February or March. Middle school bleachers should be installed before Thanksgiving break. Trustees also approved a contract with the Texas Association of School Boards to conduct the search for a new superintendent. The agreement is for $20,000 plus travel, Otmer said. Scott Murray announced his resignation in August, and the board named Chief of Schools Keeley Boyer as the interim superintendent. School board member Steve Brown abstained as he is on the TASB board of directors. In other business, trustees voted 7-0 to approve the annual financial report. Every school district is required to prepare annual financial statements, have them audited by an external public accounting firm, and submit them to the state. The auditor, Whitley Penn, issued a clean, unmodified opinion, meaning a report with no internal control findings related to the financial report and no findings related to compliance. In short, a very good report for ECISD. This comes 1 month after the district received a perfect score of 100 on the state's first report, Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas, for the fifth consecutive year. Trustees voted 7-0 to approve a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, with Sol Ross State University to grant direct admission to all ECISD seniors graduating with a 2.0 grade point average, GPA, or better. The university will waive ACT and SAT requirements for admission, along with all application fees for pledged students. This partnership supports ECISD students in their transition to higher education by reducing barriers and providing essential guidance through the admissions process. There is no cost to the district. This is now the fourth direct admissions agreement benefiting ECISD students, following similar partnerships with the University of Texas Permian Basin, Odessa College, and Tarleton State, the recap said. Feds approved Texas's plan for $3 billion to expand broadband access. Texas won federal approval Tuesday to move forward with its plan to improve broadband internet access for the estimated 7 million residents who are not connected. The National Telecommunications and Information Administration, the federal agency that advises the president on telecommunications policy issues, approved Texas's plan to use about $3.3 billion in federal money, part of the Broadband Equity, Access, and Deployment, or BEAD program. The $42.45 billion program is part of the 2021 Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. The NTIA made the announcement Tuesday that proposals for how the money will be used have now been approved in every state, territory, and the District of Columbia. Texas received the most money of any state. Texas first submitted its plan in December 2023. At the same time, the state has awarded more than $1 billion in state and federal tax dollars for broadband investments. The BEAD program has taken some time, said Greg Conte, director of the Texas Broadband Development Office. But what we've developed and had approved this morning shows how we're approaching this in a methodical way. The office announced grant awards for their Bringing Online Opportunities to Texas program, or BOOT, earlier this year. On Monday, applicants in 15 counties were awarded $580 million to connect 80,000 locations. Texas will not begin spending the $3 billion right away. First, internet service providers, nonprofits, and local and tribal governments have a chance to challenge federal maps that show where an internet connection is needed. Those maps will help influence where the billions will be spent. There will likely be several challenges, as service providers and local officials have questioned the accuracy of the map. We want to make sure the data being provided to us by the federal government is accurate and up-to-date, Conte said. In a statement, U.S. Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo congratulated the BDO, saying, "We look forward to working with you to ensure that everyone in the state is connected." This article originally appeared in the Texas Tribune. Landgraf files Texas strong to reinvest in the oil patch. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, has introduced House Joint Resolution 47 and House Bill 188, collectively known as Texas Strong, to be considered in the upcoming session of the Texas Legislature. This initiative proposes the creation of the Texas Severance Tax Revenue and Oil and Natural Gas Strong Defense Fund, designed to modernize the distribution of severance tax revenues to address critical infrastructure, education, healthcare, and public safety needs in major energy-producing communities like those in the Permian Basin. Since 2014, severance taxes have funneled through $35 billion to key state priorities, contributing $9 billion to public education, $13.3 billion to the State Highway Fund, and $13.3 billion to the Rainy Day Fund. Of that total, nearly 80% of these funds, around $4 billion, originated from just 32 Texas counties, many located in the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin has fueled America for decades, powering homes and industries, generating billions in tax revenue, and driving Texas forward, Landgraf said in a news release. Our region deserves a reinvestment that reflects its contributions to our state. Under Texas Strong, severance tax revenue that would typically flow into the state's Rainy Day Fund, which is projected to hit its constitutional cap in 2025, would be redirected to dedicated accounts benefiting energy-producing communities. These funds will support long-term investments in infrastructure, public services, and environmental cleanup efforts, such as orphaned well plugging and groundwater protection. Additionally, the initiative would contribute to statewide property tax relief benefiting all Texans. The Permian Basin is the backbone of Texas's energy sector, yet it faces ongoing infrastructure and public service demands, Landgraf added. Texas Strong is the practical solution to ensure our community has resources it needs to meet these demands and ultimately thrive. The Texas Legislature will convene at the Capitol for the 89th Legislative Session on January 14, 2025. Representative Landgraf is set to work closely with lawmakers across the aisle to advance Texas Strong, which enjoyed overwhelming bipartisan support in the previous legislative session, passing the Texas House with a decisive 144-1 vote. Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference returns in 2025 to address critical water issues in the region. The Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, PBWIEC, returns March 4th through 6th, 2025 at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Hosted by UTPB's Shepherd Leadership Institute, this premier event brings together industry leaders, government officials, researchers, and stakeholders to tackle water challenges critical to energy production in the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin is the largest oil-producing region in the United States, but energy production requires substantial water resources. As water scarcity becomes a growing concern, the PBWIEC serves as a critical forum for discussing sustainable water management, technological advances, and regulatory framework. Attendees will hear from experts across the sector who will share insights on water recycling, desalination, conservation strategies, and policy developments aimed at balancing the needs of the energy industry and the environment. The University of Texas Permian Basin plays a key role in the PBWIEC, with students, faculty, and researchers actively contributing to the dialogue. UTPB's involvement reinforces its commitment to advancing academic industry partnerships and supporting research initiatives that impact the region. Through the conference, students gain invaluable experience and networking opportunities, helping shape the next generation of energy and environmental leaders. The PBWIEC exemplifies our commitment to addressing real-world challenges by connecting academia and industry. Monica Tischnauer, Executive Director of the Shepherd Leadership Institute, said in a news release. By hosting this conference, the Shepherd Leadership Institute not only contributes to groundbreaking discussions, but also helps shape the next generation of problem solvers for the Permian Basin and beyond. As the Permian Basin continues to be a critical energy hub, the importance of addressing water management cannot be overstated. The PBWIEC provides a platform for solution-oriented discussions that will have a lasting impact on both energy production and environmental conservation in the region. For more information on the 2025 PBWIEC and registration details, please visit www.waterenergy.com. Santa is coming to town. Santa is set to fly into Odessa, to the delight of children and families across West Texas, this Saturday, November 23rd. The free festivities kick off at 9 a.m. in the north parking lot of Music City Mall at JBS and 42nd Street. Santa is expected to land at 10:30 a.m. and is bringing Mrs. Claus this year to meet and greet children across the event. Photos with Santa in Dillard's Courtyard will begin right after the event. Santa will be there for family photos through Christmas time. Walk-ups are welcome, or beat the line and book an appointment online if you can. This years-long tradition continues with staples like hot cocoa from the Odessa Chuck Wagon Gang and local performances of music and dance. Back by popular demand is the giant snow globe with photo opportunities for families. Enjoy free bounce houses, characters, music, refreshments, and fun activities. meet and greet your favorite local personalities from popular radio stations, including KISS FM 1033 and La Que Buena Radio 106.7. Head inside the MCM Rink and Roll after Santa lands for a special live skate show performed by LA Roller Entertainment, recently seen skating live with Usher in the Super Bowl halftime show earlier this year. The skaters will make an appearance just after the rink opens at noon to meet and greet skaters. Midland Festival Ballet will open the Christmas Spectacular Skate Show with a special preview of their signature Nutcracker Ballet. Obituaries, Emma Earlene Boone. Emma Earlene Boone. Surrounded by family and friends, Emma Earlene Boone finished her earthly pilgrimage and arrived at her eternal home on November 17th. She was born November 19th, 1946 in La Mesa to the late Ray and Pearl Thomas. Visitation will begin at 1 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st at St. Philip Catholic Church with a rosary recited at 1:30 p.m. Funeral Mass will follow at 2 p.m. with the Reverend Dalton Irvin officiating. Entombment will follow at Holy Cross Memorial Park. Betty Amy. Betty Jones Amy, 86, of Odessa, died Saturday, November 16th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. November 19th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home. Betty Ann Harkrider. Betty Ann Charbonneau Harkrider, 82, of Odessa, died Friday, November 15th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. November 21st at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Zella Monroe Tripp. Zella Monroe Tripp of Lubbock died Sunday, November 9th in Lubbock. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. November 23rd at Mid-Cities Church. Burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Couple facing robbery charge over fruit. An Odessa couple who shoplifted some fruit from a United supermarket is now facing a second-degree felony robbery charge after attacking the store manager, police said. According to an Odessa Police Department report, the manager told officers Joshua Madrano and Yaharia Torres, both 19, stole a tray of berries worth $6.99 and a strawberry parfait worth $3.79 from the United Supermarket at West County Road and University around 5:15 p.m. Monday. The manager, 59, told officers that Torres punched her multiple times in the face when she confronted the pair, the report stated. According to the report, school district police saw the pair run away and then enter a home on Brazos. They eventually came out of the home willingly. Torres admitted an argument with the manager turned physical, and she also admitted to stealing the berries, the report stated. Madrano admitted to stealing the parfait, but said he tried to stop the fight between the two women. Both were booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of robbery. Madrano's bail was set at $25,000. Torres, who was also booked on two outstanding warrants in an earlier drug case, had her bond set at $100,000. Very Merry Mojo Christmas Concert returns. The second annual A Very Merry Mojo Christmas Concert is set for 7:30 p.m. December 5th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. People can scan a QR code on the poster to get tickets from the Wagner Noel box office. Director of Choirs Lori Wash said the box office is open 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday through Friday to buy tickets in person. or you can buy them on the WNPAC website. Tickets can also be purchased at the door. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the show begins at 7:30 p.m. The orchestra, band, and choir will all participate in the concert. Orchestra director Todd Barrage said more than 350 students will take part. We open and close the concert all together, and then the different musical groups play at various times within the concert, Wash said. The concert will include a mixture of music from traditional carols to contemplative pieces that you might not normally think of as Christmas. Just to be a little bit different, she added. It's a pretty well-rounded evening of music, Wash said. She added that they are very glad that students will have the opportunity to experience making music together. It also gives them a chance to meet other kids they might not normally meet. To make music at the Wagner Noel is quite a privilege, Wash said. Working with orchestra director Todd Barrage and director of bands Jeff Whitaker has been a dream, she said. When a Very Merry Mojo Christmas extravaganza was organized last year, Barrage said he did not know what to expect. Needless to say, I was very impressed and frankly amazed by the talent that we have on campus, he said. I look forward to this Very Merry Mojo Christmas concert with a renewed sense of optimism. I know the students will exceed the lofty goal that was set last year. Last year's Very Mojo Christmas was the brainchild of Lori Wash, and we were a bit apprehensive about such a large undertaking, but she had faith that we could pull this off, and boy, did we ever. It was one of the highlights of my 30-year career as a music educator, Barrage said. He added that because of the large budget shortfalls across Texas, they cut positions across all fine arts programs at Permian High School. To see the kids flourish despite faculty being removed, it just goes to show how hard these kids work and how talented they are, Barrage added. 4 Midland churches celebrate partnership. 4 local churches are swapping preachers this Sunday in a show of Christian unity that stretches the bounds of most worship services. The 4 congregations represent 4 denominations: First Baptist, First Methodist, First Presbyterian, and Golf Course Road Church of Christ, and call themselves 4 Midland, a play on words with a double meaning. It is literally 4 churches that see their unique partnership for the city of Midland. Steve Brooks, senior pastor at First Methodist, said the 4 churches demonstrate Christian unity as a message of hope to be divided in a divided world. Our country is divided. To some extent, our city is similarly divided. The only group that has the capacity to stop the cycle of division is the church, God's people, who are called by our Lord Jesus to unity. We worship together across our denominational lines to be a means of grace to each other and our divided world to communicate that there is a better way. The 4 churches have been worshiping together in each other's building for the past 2 years, combining their choirs and liturgies in traditional Ash Wednesday and Maundy Thursday services. But swapping preachers on a Sunday morning feels like a bigger step toward the unity all 4 pastors desire. I don't know of any group of churches that have ever done this before, said Alan Stanglin, senior minister at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. It's one thing to come together in a midweek service with a combined order of worship, but it's a whole other thing to give your pulpit to a preacher from a different denomination on a Sunday morning. I think this speaks to the friendship we have between the 4 pastors, the love and the trust we have for each other, and the commitment we and our churches all share to more public displays of Christian unity. According to Steve Shore, lead pastor at First Presbyterian, the friendships began 3 years ago with lunches together. As we talked and prayed together about leadership in the church, ministry in our community, and challenges before our congregations, the conversations morphed into a desire to lead our congregations to worship together, Shore is preaching at First Methodist this Sunday morning. Brooks is preaching at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Stanglin is preaching at First Baptist. And Darren Wood, the senior pastor at First Baptist, is preaching at First Presbyterian. Then all four churches are coming together at 5 p.m. Sunday evening for a combined Thanksgiving service at First Baptist. All four choirs are combining into one giant choir. All four pastors will be speaking on the theme of Thanksgiving, and all four congregations are excited to experience and express their Christian unity in this larger way. "Our congregation is all in," said Brooks. "We always look forward to worshiping together with our brothers and sisters from the other three churches." Wood said the Four Midland Thanksgiving service is like a warm-up for the coming main event. Revelation 7 speaks of a great multitude of believers gathered before the throne of God for all eternity. Services like this give us a chance to get some practice at that. The next step for the four Midland churches is a combined service project, either late next spring or early summer, Stanglin said. All four of us envision some kind of service to the city, some way to work together, side by side, to bless the people of Midland in the name and manner of Jesus. Christmas in the Park. First Methodist Church of Midland invites the community to a Christmas experience the whole family can enjoy together without cost at Centennial Park on Wednesday, December 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. Listen to Christmas music from various musical acts and enjoy a variety of delicious treats available during the event. Grab a savory pulled pork sandwich, warm up with hot chocolate from Corporal Ray's Coffee, taste the sweetness of cotton candy, and enjoy a bag of Chicago-style popcorn. Santa will be there for greetings and a picture, all while surrounded by the lights of downtown Midland. This is a night without catch or cost, a gift to bring the true spirit of Christmas to the Midland community. Rural Health Day draws a crowd. To mark National Rural Health Day, Texas Tech University hosted students from around the region to help them learn about people in underserved communities. More than 350 students, faculty, and staff from Odessa College, Midland College, University of Texas at the Permian Basin, and Sul Ross State University were registered to attend the event held at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. The agenda included abstract posters, presentations, expert speakers, and a job recruitment fair. The job recruitment fair included 20 Texas organizations looking to hire rural healthcare workers. TTUHSC Permian Basin partnered with the Permian Basin Area Health Education Center, AHEC. AHEC of the Plains, and the Texas Department of Agriculture State Office of Rural Health. Dr. Adrian Billings, Associate Academic Dean of Rural and Community Engagement, said, "November 21st is actually Rural Health Day. It has been a dedicated day since 2011 around the country to celebrate and advocate for more investment in rural health care. The idea today is to really try and enable our rural students to see themselves as the solution to rural health care workforce needs in our area and also our trainees, to try and encourage them to get more rural medicine experience, hoping that they will choose to serve rural communities when they complete their training," Billing said. On hand were about 60 rural high school certified nursing assistant students from Alpine, McCamey, Crane, and Grand Falls Royalty ISDs, plus healthcare training students from OC, Midland College, UTPB, Sul Ross State University, and Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Nursing, School of Health Professions, and resident physicians from TTUHSC. "The stark realities are that rural patients die at a younger age compared to urban patients. They have more chronic, untreated diseases than urban patients. They have more pain and suffering," than urban patients. The root cause of this is a lack of access to healthcare resources, including healthcare workforce. We really are trying to create matches today between these trainees and rural communities that are needing workforce, he added. Karina Goodert is studying family medicine at TTUHSC in Odessa. She grew up in El Paso, which isn't rural, but had gotten an idea of the challenges underserved patients go through just trying to get basic care. I would really want to encourage high school students to consider pursuing a healthcare career, especially if they're already from a rural community. They can go and get their education, their training, and then return to that community and serve the people they know, the people they grew up with, because there's such a big need for it, Goodart said. Goodart was presented with the Dr. Charles Sponsell Rural Healthcare Trainee Pioneer Award. It was awarded to me because I've gotten to be involved in some rural experiences as a medical student. I've been to Alpine, I've been to Fort Stockton, I've served at a camp where I was recruiting high school students to consider healthcare careers. So that's why I was so supportive, she said. She felt honored to receive the award. There are multiple students that have been able to be involved in rural healthcare since coming to Texas Tech here in the Permian Basin. But they were kind enough to present her with the award, Goodart said. I am really grateful for it, she added. Goodart said she plans to graduate from medical school in 2025. She learned about medicine from a TV show and doesn't have anyone in her family who is in medicine. I got interested when I was a kid, just watching TV. Then in high school, I got some more experience and got an actually to shadow and volunteer with some physicians. And then the interest started to grow, Goodart said. It is a lot of work, but you finally get to see that caring for patients is like. Seeing underserved patients is very rewarding, she said. It's really important because you take for granted the things that you have access to living in a larger city. It's not that hard for a patient in Dallas, Texas, for example, to get an MRI or a CT scan, but for someone who's in a rural community, they're going to have to drive hours for that. They're going to have to take off work, and even just the drive is sometimes a risk. So getting to see that patient's experience when I've been in their towns has been really helpful for me to know, because I wasn't exposed to that growing up. I didn't know what it was like to be in a rural community, she said. Goodart said there is a vast need for more healthcare providers in general in every area. I encourage anyone interested in pursuing a healthcare career to consider doing it in a rural community. There are many different pathways, many different needs, and I think it would be great if more people would consider them, Goodart said.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 21st. Friendship trips up marriage proposal. Dear Abby, I'm a 64-year-old guy. I am single and have 2 daughters and 4 grandkids. A young woman, Sarah, who is my daughter's age, and I have been hiking buddies for the past 5 years. I treat her like my 3rd daughter and a family member. Sarah is married, and her husband does not enjoy hiking. Her husband and my daughters accept our friendship and are happy that I found a person I can hike with. I have been dating a lady named Tony who is close to my age. 6 months ago, I suggested we should spend our lives together. My daughters and Sarah were happy for me. Tony rejected my proposal, citing that I must have some kind of romantic relationship with Sarah. When I mentioned it to Sarah, she distanced from me. I think she thinks she may have interfered with my relationship with Tony. We're still friends, but not like before. Should I talk to Sarah and ask why she distanced herself from me? I feel depressed about this and have some remorse. Should not have told her what Tony said. signed Hiker in Colorado. Dear Hiker, I don't think you did anything wrong by telling Sarah what Tony implied. You have a right to ask any question you wish of your hiking buddy. You won't know why your warm 5-year relationship with her cooled unless you ask. What I would like to know is whether you are still dating Tony after she rejected your proposal. If the answer is yes, do you plan to continue knowing you have no future with her unless you find a male hiking buddy? Dear Abby, I have had a friend who has been in my life and part of my group of friends' lives since high school. Years and years later, she has become increasingly negative toward all of us for no reason. Her husband is dying now, and we don't know how to handle it. She has ghosted all of us because she's so full of hatred and negativity. We had decades of fun and memories, but she wants nothing to do with us. How do we handle the death of her husband? She says we are all phonies, which is all in her head. Signed, Perplexed in Ohio. Dear Perplexed, how long has this woman been becoming negative? There may be a reason why she has changed. Her husband is sick, and he's not going to get better. If she loves him and feels any responsibility to him at all, she's directing all of her energies in that direction. The way to handle this would be for you longtime friends to step forward. Tell her you care. Volunteer to help in any way she will allow, and do not isolate her any more than she has isolated herself. If you haven't done that, I can see why she might have said that she thought you were phonies. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.